is Wake Up with Randy Corcoran on News Talk 710 KNUS.
We are back. Final hour of the show at 11:01. Special six-hour edition of Wake Up with Randy Corcoran. So good to have you along, as it always is. Good-looking day out there. We should be 50 as we kick off the We Will Not Comply rally downtown on the west steps of the Capitol. It runs till 1. If you're not there yet, please get yourself there, even if only for a while. So very important to stand up and be counted today. We have full lines. We'll get to some calls in a minute. We're going to finish our story with about the Denver business owner dealing with human waste and needles and everything else while the city's homeless policies just compound the problem. But we just played that 6 or 7 minutes of the FDR speech announcing the attack on Pearl Harbor, which is right now almost to the minute 79 years old, started at this time just a few minutes ago in Hawaii. And thanks to Henry, just some interesting facts real quick for you. I already talked about the 1,143 people who were wounded, the 2,335 who were killed. When the USS West Virginia was raised from following the attack, there were three men discovered in a sealed compartment. Their bodies were discovered. And there was a calendar on which they'd marked off 16 days. 16 days that they stayed down there in a sealed compartment waiting for help that was unable to come in time. Just think about the heroism, the stories. It leaves me speechless. 353 aircraft during the attack on Pearl Harbor. It's unbelievable. And then the last thing, and we'll get back to some of the business of the day, but this is fascinating to me. Henry's a car guy. We've shown some of our cars together. He's got some really nice stuff. And he sent this one. Have you ever seen a 1944 Buick? Me either. No one has, because they don't exist. After the attack on Pearl Harbor, that was in 1941, the entire American auto industry went to war. No civilian automobiles, commercial trucks, or even auto parts were manufactured between February 1942 and October 1945. Manufacturers converted their plants to make military vehicles, including trucks, jeeps, and tanks. Fascinating fact of a country truly coming together. I wonder what would happen if we were somehow attacked, and we are being attacked. I didn't even talk about Pensacola, Florida today, probably won't, but if we were attacked on such a massive scale. And before we get to our first roving reporter down at the rally, text came in. Tell Randy many thanks for playing Roosevelt's speech. I'm 66 years old and never heard this entire speech. It's time I did. So, mystery man or woman texter, you told me yourself, and thank you so very much. All right, Joe is at the rally. Joe, let us know what's happening down there. Go ahead.
I'm standing right on the outside of the steps of the Capitol building. There's, I'm going to guess, 250. We need more people. Come down. These are God-fearing, Second Amendment supporting true Americans. A lot of Trump supporters here. A lot of people that believe in the Bible. It's an awesome sight, you know, to see, you know, people here supporting the Second Amendment and supporting our country, hopefully bringing Colorado back great again. You know, this idea that we're going to have red flag laws that allows the government to just willy-nilly take your gun.
Yeah.
It's insane.
It's coming. Joe, thanks for the early report. We'll keep mentioning it and encouraging people to get over there. Got full lines and a guest on hold, but thank you for waiting so long to weigh in and let us know that we're off to a good start. Thank you, sir.
Thank you, Randy.
You betcha. West steps of the Capitol, 11 to 1. It's getting started very soon, but there's plenty of time to show up in force. People need to see people. We don't have the paid protesters. We don't have the Soros money. We have jobs and families, and it's 2 weeks before Christmas. There's shopping to do. I get it. Man, stop by. Bring your kids and your family. Show them citizen activism at work on the west steps of the Capitol. I hope you'll get there right now. And so we've got a Denver business owner on hold. We're going to talk to her in just a second. I just want to bring Joade back into the conversation so he can hear from Tricia. Joade, do we have you?
I'm here.
All right. Joade Bazyar owns Forethought.net down in Curtis Park. Been dealing with human feces, needles, trespassers, violence, increasing threats of violence, sometimes police who don't care. More often, I'd say it's probably police who just can only do so much and know that handing out a ticket to a homeless person does absolutely nothing. And before we get into where you're at right now, you've been charged by the city now. You've got a GoFundMe page up to try and help and defend yourself and maybe try and make a difference here in Denver, start a movement we'd love to see around the country to push back against these policies. But Tricia wanted to comment on you, and I want to bring her on real quick. Go ahead, Tricia. Welcome to the show, and thanks for waiting so long.
Hey. Well, thank you, Randy. Listen, I wanted to say, I think the whole frame, we've allowed the leftists to frame this around poverty and homelessness. This isn't about poverty. When people are poor, they don't act like animals. They don't crap on the sidewalk. This is not about poverty. It's about addiction, and I think your guest had it right on when he pointed that out, and I think that too, if we tolerate it to the extent this behavior is tolerated, it grows. So the more unlawful condemnations, really, of public and private land being made by this transient, and I call them vagrants, I do not call them homeless, I think that's the problem. We're being tolerant, and every tolerance grows the problem.
Tricia, you've made your point and made it well. Because of full lines and limited time, I'm going to move. Thank you so much for waiting to weigh in. You know, we had an example of that with the ICE facilities. When Aurora police weren't prepared, they were able to get in on trespass that property, take down the American flag, try to burn it, deface the Blue Lives Matter flag, embarrass everybody. And yet when citizens got together, when we stood up, when Michelle Malkin said, "This will not stand," and we put together those rallies, we didn't allow misbehavior, and you see it in these protests when people get hurt. If there aren't crackdowns on violence, if we don't start enforcing your right to your property, Joade, then we just invite more of these problems. And so, you know, you've shared with me, and I'm gonna help you with this. I'm gonna represent you in this. Want everybody to know that that's the case. But you've shared with me the helpful tips that you've received from the city and county of Denver, how to process the human waste using rubber gloves, how to dispose of it, how to sanitize after. They are shifting this burden for their ridiculous homeless policies onto you and your employees. How can you, as a business owner, be expected to order your staff to go out there and deal with this problem? That's not what they signed on for. And they can do the kind of work that's done from their home if they have to. I mean, that doesn't help you as a business owner and a property owner.
Right. No, it's absolutely correct. I mean, no, they didn't sign on for it. And my employee who had been doing it before, it was sort of a volunteer basis. And I, you know, I get so busy, I'd never really given it a whole lot of thought. But when it came to, you know, a decision to what we were going to do going forward, when that employee went and got a different job, you know, I just couldn't, in my mind, connect the dots. I couldn't bring myself to say, okay, you, new employee, go do this, right? It is a shifting of the burden, right? It's as if they would tell me, oh, okay, well, you know, these people, you're a victim of a crime, so you now have to deal with the cost, the full cost of prosecuting and maybe imprisoning this person. That's not reasonable. The purpose of government is to enforce laws that protect lives and property. And if they don't do that, and if their response is instead to say, hey, you know, just bear the cost, then they're abdicating. They're abdicating their, their responsibilities as the government.
Yeah, no question about it. And so you decided that you're not going to try and force your employees to do it. You can't keep up with this problem yourself. You shouldn't have to. So you took a stand to try and hold the city accountable. And now they've come and actually served you with three violations: failure to comply with a notice, order, rule, or regulation, notice to abate conditions, failure to comply, improper accumulation of trash, failure to comply with an order. Now, the first summons, they had the wrong case number. It was a mess. We couldn't even get information. When we'd called down there, it was a different defendant and the whole nine yards, but they came back this week and they served you again.
Yeah, we received that, I think, on Wednesday or Thursday.
Yeah, and so explain what that was like. Were you treated respectfully? Were you bossed around? Was it the police state in action?
Well, this time I was out of town, and I think they provided the service to our registered agent, so I was out of the loop until they sent me a copy of the summons. So at least, you know, this time they didn't have, you know, this time I wasn't, I didn't have to deal with the
fact that
they brought a police officer and threatened to arrest me unless I cooperated in filling out the form.
That's what I was talking about. I didn't realize it was the first time. I thought it was the most recent time. So they said if you don't show your ID and cooperate, they'll arrest you.
Yes.
Well, we'll see about all that. Now, you have set up, obviously, this kind of a fight, especially if it gets into the federal courts and constitutional rights, the whole nine yards can get expensive. You have set up a GoFundMe. People were quick to respond when the story was fresh. Everybody's kind of turned away through Thanksgiving and everything else. But let people know how they can help you if they're a business owner or a resident of Denver, or they just understand that we have to make a stand on this problem and want to help you be at the forefront of doing that.
Yeah, absolutely. Any donations or help would be appreciated. We have a GoFundMe set up. If you just do a Google search for GoFundMe Bazyar, B-A-Z-Y-A-R, that should pull it up. And I don't know if you can share the link out through any channels you have, Randy, but anyone who gets this and finds it, any help would be appreciated, because this will take some money, and any money that we don't use, we're going to identify some worthwhile charity that helps homeless people. And
you bet,
you know, we haven't made any decisions, but you know,
you're a good-hearted guy. You don't want to hurt these folks, but they're hurting you and your staff and your business, and they're not getting any help. They're not being benefited by being able to hang out for a night on your property and then leave you with the needles, the trash, and the poop. I mean, that's not good for anybody. So we know we've got the holidays coming up. The one good thing about with the mistake on their summons is you're not in court until January, later in January, so we'll have plenty of time to talk about this some more. But I will share on my Facebook pages, Law Offices of Randy Corcoran, Wake Up, my personal page, etc. We'll tweet this out, try and really build up those resources in case we get into the fight of the century. And Joade, I know we'll be talking again. Thank you very much for your flexibility, given all the things that are going on down here today, to kind of tell your story in two parts today. I really do appreciate it, and I'll talk to you next week.
Thanks, Randy.
All right. God bless you, sir. And I will tell you, I've been hearing from other businesses. If you're a business, just go to corporanlaw.com and send us a message that even if you don't want to be identified, but you want to help or get involved or have some information or whatever it is, this is at the very beginning of this process to finally, right here in our own backyard, my native city of Denver, Colorado, push back on these ridiculous, socialist, brainless, homeless policies that encourage poverty, encourage drug use, encourage violence, lack of sanitation, etc. It's time to say enough is enough. And so we've got another caller on the line with a Pearl Harbor story, and I just think about this for 1 second before we bring Rick on. 78 years ago, I don't remember what day it was, but should have looked. I think it was a Friday, wasn't it? Pearl Harbor happened on a Friday, as I recall. It was a Sunday, that's right. So maybe you were already home from church, or you're getting ready to go to church and your radio's on, and all of a sudden the breaking news is the United States of America, our naval base, is under attack. Hundreds of Japanese bombers death, mayhem, the whole nine yards. We played the FDR speech that ran on the next day on December the 8th that inspired a nation to stand up and not only put a stop to Japanese tyranny, but obviously we got involved and solved and ended the German tyranny as well. But my God, 78 years ago today, right now, this was all happening. So, Rick, you've got a story on Pearl Harbor. Thanks for waiting so long. It's been hard to get to calls today. But welcome to Wake Up with Randy Corcoran.
Yeah, good morning. It's supposed to be the case that some Japanese fleet led a U.S. fleet around for months, and it turned out to be a dummy at some point. So that's some of the things that can occur.
Well, there is a great series on Netflix where they have restored archived footage, actual footage of all kinds of major incidents, speeches, etc. They've digitized and colorized it on Netflix, and I've been watching several hours so far. Got into Pearl Harbor just several days ago when I was home with my sick wife, and it to relive those moments and to think about the reality of it. You know, we go to movies, and they're so real now. But they're nothing like watching the actual footage, even if it's grainy, crappy, restored, off color, whatever,
right.
Watching the actual events as they unfolded. But yeah, the Japanese had prepared for this. We were not ready. We didn't have the training. We didn't have the planes. And so the fact that we survived that initial onslaught and then turned our entire national attention to defending ourselves and defending the world in World War II is a real testament to the importance of the United States on the world stage, and that continues today.
Yeah, there's also an incident shown in the March of Time series where the Navy had been, it's just pathetic there. Some ship was disabled due to an error, and man, the sailors were running around and something had caved in, and the whole thing, it was like an oversight.
Yeah, well, and that story I just told at the start of this segment with the men who were down in the bottom in a sealed container of a sunken ship and marked 16 days off the calendar before
right.
they succumbed. I mean, it's...
Yeah, right. You really have to think about that.
Oh,
you really have to
Rick, well,
pray
God,
and...
God bless you, man. Thank
yeah,
you
thank
so much.
You.
You better believe it. All right, let's squeeze in one more call. We will be joined by Colorado State GOP Chairman and Congressman Ken Buck. He's on the Judiciary Committee. I had a lot of sound and commentary on the impeachment hoax. There'll be plenty of time for that. It's another 2 months we're going to be stuck with this mess as a nation before the acquittal of the 45th president of the United States and the almost guaranteed reelection by massive margins, thanks to the idiocy of Nancy Pelosi and so many on that radical side. But let's squeeze in at least one more caller. That's Tony in Littleton. And thanks for joining the show, Tony. Good morning.
Hey, good morning, Randy. I was listening to you talk about Pearl Harbor, and I've got just a great trivia story for you. The first ship that was sunk on Pearl Harbor was actually a freighter off the West Coast named the Cynthia Olson. My dad had turned 16 on September 20th, 1941, boarded a ship called the Coastal Trader. It went to the Philippines, offloaded, then loaded up. Then on the return voyage, as they approached the U.S., they heard a mayday, and it was a ship called, again, the Cynthia Olson, sunk by a Japanese submarine, I-26. And the submarine was not supposed to attack anything till after Pearl Harbor started, but he came across it just a few hours before. And so they sunk that ship. My dad's ship, the Coast Trader, came upon it, and all there was just wood, because they were hauling wood, and wood was just floating around, and so that was technically the first ship that went down. And kind of to close that story, so my dad gets back to San Francisco day after Pearl Harbor, gets off, and then that ship would make its runs from San Francisco to L.A. and sometimes to the Philippines, but between the two coastal cities, and that same submarine, the I-26, a Japanese I-26, sunk his ship.
Wow.
He was off it, but that same sub. So that sub started the war, technically, was the first ship. Isn't that a great story?
Yeah, and he survived it all.
Yeah, yeah. He just happened to be a you know, at a front row seat, I guess you could say.
Tony, thanks so much. We're running late. Yeah. It was so great that you hung on for that story. I do love it. We've got Ken Buck on the other side. And just a quick note of thanks to my dad and his brothers, my mom and her brother, all of the brothers who served in World War II, all of our family, grandparents, aunts, uncles, whatever they were. God bless you all, and thank you so very much. 11:21, though, we're going to move on. Impeachment is still underway, the impeachment scam, the impeachment hoax. Congressman Ken Buck sits on the Judiciary Committee. He's also the chairman of your Colorado State GOP, and he will spend some time with us when we come back on Wake Up with Randy Corcoran, 710 KNUS.
Now, back to Wake Up with Randy Corcoran on News Talk 710 KNUS.
Time flies when you're having fun, and it has been a wonderful morning. Thanks so very much for staying with us at 11:26. Rally underway on the west steps of the Capitol. If you can get over there before 1 o'clock just to make an appearance, so very, very important to do that. A little bit of breaking news on the shooting on the naval base in Pensacola, Florida. The Saudi student who was the shooter and has been killed himself apparently hosted a dinner party earlier this week where he and three others watched videos of mass shootings in the United States. That's according to an anonymous U.S. official reported to the AP. And we know that there were three others who were around during the shooting videotaping the event. So going to be a lot of conversation on that in the week ahead. But right now we've got a good friend of mine, somebody that I've known way back when he was just the district attorney. And I say just, it's district attorney is very important. But I only knew him as a district attorney because occasionally our Denver law firm would have cases in Weld County and we'd have to deal with him and his very effective and successful prosecution teams. And I came to like him. I came to respect him. And nothing has changed that. He joins us now, Congressman and Colorado State GOP Chairman Ken Buck. Good morning, sir.
Good morning.
All right. Always seems like I'm always late with you. I'm sorry for that. I know you're just flying like crazy, got a lot of plates in the air. And I haven't even talked about the impeachment scam today. But just as a quick reminder for folks, I thought Matt Gaetz really hit it out of the park near the end of the Nadler horror show earlier this week.
Yeah, I thought he did well also, Randy. Matt made a point of talking about the bias of the three witnesses that appeared. It was interesting because all four witnesses, all four law professors that appeared were Democrats. All four voted for Obama, all four voted for Hillary Clinton. It just was one of those four Democrats believes that the standard that the Democrat majority in the House is using is so low that it really threatens our republic. I give Professor Turley credit for that.
Yeah, he's taken a lot of flack. He's written about calls for his job, threats on his person and his family, his livelihood, etc. Let's give folks just a few seconds of Matt Gaetz.
So let's see if we can get into the facts. To all of the witnesses, if you have personal knowledge of a single material fact in the Schiff report, please raise your hand.
No hands went up.
And let the record reflect, no personal knowledge of a single fact. And you know what? That continues on the tradition that we saw from Adam Schiff, where Ambassador Taylor could not identify an impeachable offense. Mr. Kent never met with the president. Fiona Hill never heard the president reference anything regarding military aid. Mr. Hale was unaware of any nefarious activity with aid.
Yeah, and he went on and on. And you took kind of a different tack. I thought it was fascinating. I was watching the hearings and you explain to people, because so many people aren't paying attention to this. Ratings are down. CNN, lowest ratings in 3 years. People are getting ready for the holidays. The support for impeaching this president continues to plummet. But you decided to approach this from a different angle. How did you handle your opportunity to question these four law professors?
He went down to committee prepared to talk about the crime of bribery. And the crime of bribery means that both parties need to have a complete understanding that there will be an exchange of value, an exchange of money or some valuable item for a favor. And so they're suggesting that President Trump was, soliciting this bribe. He would give foreign aid, but he wanted information in return. The problem with bribery is that the recipient of the bribe has to have a full understanding that a bribe is occurring. And that's not what President Zelensky has said. So I went down with one idea. And then as I listened to the testimony, everybody kept talking about this abuse of power standard. The founders had a long debate about impeachment, and they decided that it was that they should have it. And then the question was, what was the standard? The first proposal was maladministration, and then they went to incompetence, and they all decided, no, it has to be something much greater than that. And so they raised the bar to high crimes or misdemeanors as the treason, bribery, or high crimes and misdemeanors. And when I heard this abuse of power, it is such a low bar that we could have impeached many, many presidents in the past, and several in the future will undoubtedly be subject to that abuse, that standard. And so I just felt that we're really putting our republic at risk if we lower the bar to that extent.
And so you set out examples of decisions, leverage points that different presidents had used in history, and asked if that would qualify as an abuse of power. And of course, you got not anyone tried to allege that was. You didn't bring up the fact that candidate Ted Kennedy, when he was running to try and unseat Ronald Reagan, reached out. Oh, the records have been released. He reached out and tried to coordinate with Russia, saying, we've got to stop this guy. There's going to be war, and trying to get the help of the Russians to influence the American election. And it's interesting, Ken, I was at Cory Gardner's Christmas party last night, first time in many years that I've been invited. But the people that were there were fascinating. And I had folks come up to me and say, well, I didn't quite understand what Ken was doing. But my mother, 88 years old, who is always my arbiter of common sense and doing the right thing, she loved what you did, because, you know, everybody was pounding on kind of the obvious, important and necessary, but obvious points. And you brought out a whole entirely different perspective for people to be thinking about. And I don't think any of the professors really knew how to handle it. Turley certainly acknowledged that none of those other uses of leverage in conversation or whatever would have been or should have been impeachable offenses.
Well, not only that, but Turley said he couldn't think of any president in the United States history that couldn't have been impeached.
Under this new standard.
Exactly what the founders,
yeah.
Right, that's what the founders were trying to avoid.
Right.
And then Carlin, the professor, the lady from Stanford, she started getting into it. Well, of course they should have been impeached if they did those things. Well, my goodness, that just completely undermines the continuity that we need in leadership in this country.
Absolutely. So we know we've got a little bit more of the Nadler show. The letter from the White House said, you know, we're not going to participate. Please vote quickly, because we want our day in court in a fair process where we present the witnesses we choose and have the opportunity to defend ourselves, not in these strict limits of certain witnesses that can and can't be called, who can be present. You can't see certain transcripts, even though you're a congressman and have clearances and the whole nine yards. The White House, wisely in my mind, is not going to participate next week, but you are on the Judiciary Committee. What do you expect to happen on Monday? Interesting timing, by the way, that they decided to schedule this the same day the release of the Horowitz IG report.
Yeah, so Monday we will have two witnesses, the counsel for the Democrats and the counsel for the Republicans. Mr. Goldman and Mr. Castor will be present and testify. Typically, it is the chairman of the committee that is presenting the report to the Judiciary Committee and the ranking member of the committee. So it would be Adam Schiff and Devin Nunes, and Adam Schiff and Jerry Nadler have changed the rules so that Adam Schiff does not have to appear. He would obviously be under oath, and he would be answering questions about the whistleblower and other things. And so we will have a full day of hearings where we will be questioning staff. Unbelievable. God. In fact, staff will be questioning staff about the the report, and then members will get a chance to question. And so, and I have to tell you, there are some staff members who walk around that Capitol Hill and think they have put their name on a ballot and have been elected, and they haven't. And I think you're going to see some of that arrogance come out on Monday.
Well, I don't know how we could get any more arrogance than was already dished out. The law professors, and you got to give Turley credit, not a Trump supporter or voter, certainly not a conservative, believes, I think, a great deal in leftist social policies, but his focus is his expertise, which is the Constitution. And he's now put his career and his reputation among, you know, the Silver Spoon crowd. And his family at risk for standing up and telling the truth. I can't imagine anybody other than, you know, geeky people like me will be watching what's going on, or at least keeping tabs on it next week. People are heading into Congress. We see the unbelievable fundraising that the Republicans and the president and others are doing on this. We see what's happening in the polls. We see Democrats who are very concerned about this impact on their reelection next year, especially Democrats in districts that voted for Trump back in 2016. Is there anything, you know, things that none of us know because of where you are and what you do? Is there anything that's coming up that is going to change this trajectory? And if so, or if not, why in the heck is Nancy Pelosi moving forward with this?
Well, she's moving forward because she's boxed in. On the one hand, she has to satisfy her base that they've done everything possible to remove this president. On the other hand, she is putting her members in tough districts at risk. And by the way, the Democrats are raising a ton of money off of impeachment also. And so if she did not move forward with this, their fundraising efforts would be hurt. Their ability to mobilize activists would be hurt. So this is very political. As nothing, I spent the plane ride back last night reading the Senate rules, and there's nothing that says that hearsay and speculation and other things won't come in the Senate. Now, you'll have Chief Justice Roberts there. You'll have some very good attorneys, Ted Cruz, Mike Lee, and others that will be able to bring things to the attention of the other members. But it's really in some ways a suicide mission for the Democrats to continue this when they know that they will be embarrassed in the United States Senate.
And especially we see now that Mitch McConnell has cleared the entire month of January. Those are months when Democrat senators who are running for president need to be on the road in Iowa and elsewhere. And so the political ramifications of this for the left just seem extraordinary. Ken, have you ever heard Nancy Pelosi talk about the wrap-up smear?
I have not, no.
Are you good to stay for another segment?
Sure.
Okay. Sure. All right, it's a very short clip. I want you to listen to this. We'll go to break, and then we'll have a good chunk of time with you on the other side. This is Speaker of the House Nancy Pelosi back in 2017, I think was the date. Might have been 2016, talking about the wrap-up smear. When you hear this, it's very short, but think about Brett Kavanaugh and what he went through, and think about President Donald Trump and what the Democrats are trying to put him through and the country through right now.
You demonize, and then we call it the wrap-up smear. If you want to talk politics, call it the wrap-up smear. You smear somebody with falsehoods and all the rest, and then you merchandise it. And then you write it, and they'll say, see, it's reported in the press that this, 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 and this. So they have that validation that the press reported the smear, and then it's called the wrap-up smear. Now I'm going to merchandise the press's report on the smear that we made. And it's a tactic, and it's self-evident.
It sure is. Why in the world? I don't know what she was drinking that day that would cause her to actually tell that, not just in public, but to the media. But it's out there for all to hear. It sure fits what's going on right now. We'll get the take of Congressman Ken Buck when we come back, and then we'll also put on the Colorado State GOP hat to look ahead to 2020 and what's going on in Colorado. So everybody stay with us. Last segment of this special six-hour edition of Wake Up with Randy Corporan right here on 710 KNUS.
We now return to Wake Up with Randy Corporan on News Talk 710 KNUS.
got that right. That's why we are rallying on the west steps of the Capitol as we speak. We will not comply. I'm doing these red flag classes. People are showing up in droves, wall to wall. And it's going to be a very, very interesting 2020. We'll talk to Colorado State GOP Chairman Ken Buck about that in just a moment. But right now, we're asking him to keep his Congressman Ken Buck hat on. He had not heard Nancy Pelosi talking about this very intentional tactic, very, very well planned and very adequately described in this short clip, the wrap-up smear.
You demonize, and then we call it the wrap-up smear. If you want to talk politics, you call it the wrap-up smear. You smear somebody with falsehoods and all the rest, and then you merchandise it. And then you write it, and they'll say, see, it's reported in the press that this, 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 and this. So they have that validation that the press reported the smear. And then it's called the wrap-up smear. Now I'm going to merchandise the press's report on the smear that we made. And it's a tactic, and it's self-evident.
Now, of course, it's obvious if you see that whole speech that she's talking about accusing Republicans of using this technique, and it's a classic trick of the left to accuse and attack others for doing what they do to try and divert. Read Saul Alinsky's Rules for Radicals, if you haven't. It's not too late. Very, very important. But Ken Buck, you hadn't heard that phraseology before. It was Pelosi accusing you guys of doing that sort of thing. But what do you think when you hear something like that from the speaker?
You know, I have to say my first thought was how effective the Democrats in Colorado have been using that. They have, you know, under the Gill umbrella, they have set up a number of different organizations. And I know when I was running before, they would start a rumor over here, and then an online newspaper or blog would cover it. And then pretty soon it was in the Denver Post, and people thought it was fact. And you know, they have all these groups that sound really good. Americans United for Taxpayer This, and all kinds of nonsense. And I'm sure we do it also on our side, but it is certainly a tactic that the Colorado Democrats have used very effectively.
Well, we darn well better learn to do it better, because you're right. I mean, people who want to know what happened in Colorado, then went to Virginia. That was the second state of the blueprint. That was now Governor Jared Polis, Pat Stryker, Tim Gill, and Rutt Bridges bringing vast amounts of money and brain power together with concerted strategies. And that's part of why we find ourselves in the mess we're in here in the state of Colorado. You took on, Ken Buck, the role of being the Colorado State GOP. With the presidential election, the reelection campaign of Cory Gardner, so important in 2020. And I can't imagine, given your level of success, your determination, whatever, that you'd have taken that on to go into next year and lose.
No, I don't plan on losing. I don't think we're going to lose. Yeah. I have to tell you, I see a very energized base. I see the Democrats. The one thing you can count on Democrats doing, and they do this very effectively, is they overreach. Every time they're in power, they overreach. The bills coming out of the U.S. House are ridiculous. The bills that come out of the state legislature signed by this governor are ridiculous. And we will have a lot of issues that so many in the middle of the political spectrum in Colorado find offensive. Not only did they lose on Proposition CC, my bet is that they double down and they go even further in this next legislative session and put something on the ballot next November that's worse than CC. They just can't help themselves. And you mentioned red flag laws. We had a sex education bill come out of the legislature. We've had so much that's really been bad for Coloradans. And I think we'll have a lot of good material to work with. And we have a lot of energized donors right now, and a lot of energized activists, and I think we're going to, I think we'll do very well in Colorado in 2020.
Well, you know, listeners to this station are a skeptical bunch, and we get plenty of calls, you know, where's Corey, Ken, what's different, where are the victory offices, all of that sort of thing. And I want to tell you, I went to Corey's Christmas party last night, the first time in many years I've been invited. And let me tell you, there were women for Trump, bikers for Trump, the Trump Victory Campaign Regional West director was down there. I had a great conversation with him. There were powerful women. There were young people. There were activists, Tea Party level, and other groups that I affiliate with all the time. Room was wall to wall and packed. And Corey hit all of the sweet spots in talking about just how critical this next fight is with the push against our ability to worship where we want, if we want, when we want, the freedom of speech, the red flag, all of those kinds of things. The fight is truly for the survival of our state and our country as a constitutional republic focused on freedom. And I walked out of that party feeling very, very energized. I always have the conversations when I get a chance to talk to you or Corey or the people that are supporting him. You know, what are we waiting for? All these ads are up, these attack ads and that sort of thing. And I got to tell you, the answers that I get, I tend to agree with that, you know, timing is everything and money is a finite resource. And so I walked out of there, especially given the mix of coalitions and people coming together to support Cory Gardner on you know, 2 weeks before Christmas, that we are going to come out of the gate firing on all cylinders. Are we going to have the resources to set up the victory offices that we need? Are we going to have the people on the ground and the trainings to get district captains and precinct leaders and all of those things in place? Because the Democrats maintain those structures and those organizational structures, I guess, year round.
We absolutely will. And you're absolutely right. We have not done this right in the past. There are some third party groups that are forming out there that I believe will take over after the 2020 election cycle and will, outside of the Colorado Republican Party, do what the Democrats do, and that is to fund these things. The ads that are being run against Cory Gardner are not being paid for by John Hickenlooper. They're not being paid for by Andrew Romanoff and not being paid for by the Colorado Democratic Party. They are third-party money, Tom Steyer, Michael Bloomberg money that is being used to try to soften the target. And Corey is doing a great job getting around the state. And one of the things that I want to do as state party chair is to make sure that people know all the places Corey's going. I want to start putting on our website the great work that our state legislative candidates are doing and the great work that Corey is doing in running for office and in other offices, obviously. But we will have resources. We have 7 out of 8 field directors on the ground now. We're not going to spend money, you know, buying or renting office space and you know, signage and all those things. These are people who are working out of their home or their working out of somebody has a spare office and they're working there. But we're keeping the costs low so that when it comes closer to the election, we have the resources to make a difference.
Had a text from a listener. Chuck Bonniewell talks about this all the time. When Trimka's on with Chuck and Julie, they're what the Democrats have down. Chuck says, we'll never win as Republicans in Colorado while this is going on with all mail ballots. They have a machine in place to harvest those ballots, you know, the ones that are in the mailboxes, tossed in the trash at apartment buildings, going into nursing homes and other places and getting people signed up and then being the man or woman to transfer those ballots. And nobody pays attention to these limits of being able to bring only 10 ballots in. Are we thinking about, are we focused on, will we have some resources to push back against the Democrat machine when it comes to ballot harvesting time right at the election?
Absolutely. One of the things we've learned in Weld County, Randy, is that the Democrats do a very good job on the campus at the University of Northern Colorado. We are working right now to set up groups and to the groups are set up for the most part, the college Republicans on the different campuses, but really to invigorate those groups and to make sure that we also have students that are out voting. We have a great system courtesy of the Republican National Committee that identifies the low propensity voters that we need to get out that came out in 2016 that we need to get out in this election. Cory Gardner will have a fantastic
ground game, and we know that, and we are trying to work with him to make sure that we help that ground game, but also that we help other candidates with that ground game. So the one thing that's happening this year that I think people that have been around the party for years will tell you, there is absolutely no daylight between Donald Trump's campaign, Cory Gardner's campaign, and the state Republican Party. We are housed together. We talk every day. Anytime someone says to me, I want to go do this, my first answer to them is make sure that the Trump campaign and the Gardner campaign are okay with it before we move down with a new initiative. So I think we have the strategy and resources to be very effective in 2020.
All right. Well, Congressman Ken Buck, Colorado State GOP Chairman Ken Buck, I walked away from that party last night and seeing the closeness of all these different groups, including Corey and the Trump victory folks, walked away with a great deal of confidence. And it's really good to hear your voice today. Thanks for your time. I know we'll have you back on before the holidays, but just in case, Merry Christmas to you and your family.
Thanks to you also, Randy. Thank you.
All right. God bless you. All right. Well, I can't believe it. The special six-hour edition of Wake Up with Randy Corcoran coming to a close. I'll be hopping in the car, flying down to the We Will Not Comply rally, west steps of the Capitol. You can get there, too. I want to just make sure that I touch that hallowed soil and join my fellow patriots for even a few minutes. Thank you so very much for your input today, for being around, for listening on this historic 78th anniversary of the bombings of Pearl Harbor. If you missed any of the shows, grab the podcast at 710KNUS. I'm Randy Corcoran. Always remember, never forget, God loves you, so do I. God bless America, and God bless you.